Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler with Visit Myrtle Beach, and I am joined today with Adam Stoker, the Adam, the one and only Adam Stoker. How are you, Adam?
Well, I'm better than our listeners who have had to take a lot of quick drinks real quick. But I got to tell you, casual Friday looks good on you, Stuart. I will say that this idea that you get to interpret the word football jersey,
yep,
whatever way you see fit, remember where you are, Stuart. Come on.
Well, yeah, I know. But I've been called a troublemaker in this industry before, but I'm also a troublemaker in the office. And so when we had casual Friday and we were asked to represent our favorite football team in honor, because we're recording this the day, it's the Friday before the Super Bowl. I obviously had to represent Manchester United because that's my football team. So we'll see what I haven't showcased this to the rest of the team here yet today. So we'll see. I'm sure they'll roll their eyes. They'll be like,
they'll be as
so
disappointed as I am.
Probably so. Although I did get in an Uber this morning and the guy said, "What are you wearing?" And I'm like, I was telling him the shtick. And he goes, "Get out of my car. I'm a Man City fan." That's what he said. So it was good. We had a lot of banter. But we're being rude, Adam. We have a guest with us. Let's certainly introduce her. I've got to say, this is a really exciting guest because she is a trailblazer on the content side. She's been doing an amazing, amazing podcast that I really love. And it's very different than a lot of DMO podcasts. But we're joined today with Kristen Reynolds from Long Island. How are you, Kristen?
I'm great. And I'm sporting my Home of the Ryder Cup merch today in my attire. So looking forward to hosting that on Long Island.
You know, I was going to mention that, Kristen. I'm a little jealous of the Ryder Cup apparel that you've got there.
You should be. I say.
Team Europe all the way. Is that who we're pulling for?
Oh, please. This is Trump's America.
You know what? Next week, literally. So we're recording. What is the date today? It's like February, what, 7th? I think 8th? 7th, yeah. So February 12th, so just next week, is going to be the tipping point. And I'll be half English and half American, because that'll be, I will have been in America just as long as I was in England. So February 12th next week, I might have to bite the bullet and start pulling.
Yay,
for
America.
Team US.
What are we going to rename in that honor?
I don't know. Maybe well, I'll take a new name. I don't know.
Maybe we'll have them start spelling Stuart correctly. I don't know. We'll see.
That's the Scottish way is the EW. So I'm clearly the English way in every sense. But Kristen, I am a big fan of yours. I got to tell you, the podcast you do, the Long Island Tea podcast, it was so inspirational to me in my early career here, because it was the first example I really found of a DMO that was trying to create great entertaining content and not just trying to sell the destination. And so if anyone hasn't listened to that podcast, it's really good. And you get to know Kristen at a deep level. Like the last episode, you were talking about kids being sick and all this fun stuff. So I love it. I'm really hats off to you.
Thank
tip of the hat.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. And I think the success that it has shown, hopefully, and I love all the content. You know, we've always talked about your content as well at Myrtle Beach, and hopefully people are looking at that and using it as a model. It's surprising to me how many people don't still, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, me too, Chris.
And you might be foreshadowing there a little bit because Stu's news today, we're going to talk a little bit about the DI Marcom. I just returned from that. Actually, I got home to my house last night or this morning at 3:40 a.m. We're recording this at like 10 a.m. and I've been in the office already over an hour. So I'm on fumes, which means I had to caffeinate. I don't usually. That means I'm going to be way more hyper than I typically even am. So you've all been warned, both you guys and the audience at home. But I think there's a few more trailblazers coming into the industry. And I think there are increasingly people willing to take risks. I met some amazing CMOs and marketing folks at Marcom this week that just very inspirational. So we'll dig into that. Are you guys ready for that segment? Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm excited.
The number one segment.
Every week, a brand new cheese.
This will never get old for me, Stuart.
Are we going to do a shorter version of it? Like, I feel like you need like a...
No, you got to let it marinate every time. But listen, we're missing the dance. I don't like the way that it's in.
All right, I think we can go. I think we can
go. I think you're right. It's almost done. Oh, no, we'll just do once.
I think even your mom is going to stop listening to the show, to be fair. I mean, that's like, really. So your homework for this week is to go back and like, let's snip like a 10 second or like just the highlight reel of that song or something, because it's, man, it's grating on me. I know it's grating on the audience.
Yeah. I'll look into it.
Yeah. Let's do a refined version, or maybe every week you just do a new version until we find like the sweet spot. I don't know. But today's Stu's News is brought to you by Stu, and he's going to talk about Marcom. So this is my first time attending that summit. And in full disclaimer, I'm on the marketing committee for DI. So big fan of a lot of the work they do. But I had no idea going into it what to expect. I'd been told, you know, originally this was more of a CMO summit, so it gets a little deeper. And so, first of all, it was bigger than I thought. There were like, I think over 400 people. It was a sellout. They said they had 100 plus people wait list. So it was, there were more than I thought, but everyone there was like ready to roll up their sleeves and get going. And they did some really cool sessions. Some of them were more like conversational, like roundtable stuff, which I really appreciated hearing from my peers. But I got to call out a couple of standouts. So one of them, Jeanette Rouse, crushed it. She and I were on a panel talking about the ethics of AI, and that girl, she never ceases to amaze me. Just really, really knowledgeable. But there were other AI topics that weren't surface level. So Mad Media, Matt, not Steiker, the other Matt, I forget his last name. Is it Clemens? I forget his name.
But Clement.
Yeah, Clement. He did one where it really dug into how he uses Notebook LM and other things for strategic planning. So it was really more of a hands-on session. I thought that was good. There was a lot of talk about data, and not all of it was well received by the audience. There was a lot of folks, the highlights, I'd say, MMGY's new product, Eureka, is very good. Aaron from MMGY presented that, where they've basically taken 10 years of the portrait of American traveler, portrait of Black traveler, portrait of Hispanic traveler, all their research studies, and they've put that into an LLM that you can question. So you can license all of that input intel and ask it questions and segment and plan from it. So I thought that was pretty cool. But there was a few panels where they were talking about attribution and stuff like that. And it was just like, these vendors are unbelievable at selling the blue pill. And I'm stealing that again from Zeke Coleman, one of our previous guests. And I actually got to meet Zeke for the first time. And I got to tell you, that dude's taller than I realized. Like, I'm 6'2". He made me feel short. But he asked an amazing question at the end of one of the panels, because they were, you know, the usual data folks were on stage and they were all pontificating. And he said, all right, I want you to tell me, who do you lose business to and why? What did they do better than you do? And no, they wouldn't answer the question. Someone sort of did a cop-out answer and said, well, the real competitor is not looking at the data. But like, the whole audience was like, bravo, Zeke, for asking those questions. But this concept of confusing the correlation and causation was very apparent on stage. And this is probably the low point for me. And I'm not going to call the person out individually because the whole panel was saying this, but I'll give you an example. They were talking about how great it is to pixel people and track them all the way through to conversion and showing up in market. And someone said, well, we got this amazing insight that this one client, the number one page that was contributing to visitation on their website was an ice cream trail page. And so, I mean, obviously people are coming to the destination because of ice cream, and everyone in the audience is thinking the exact same thing. They're like, no, people have already decided to come to the destination and they're looking for things to do. And ice cream is kind of a cool thing, but you can't tell me there's a single destination where ice cream is the number one factor that makes people's decision, right? So I don't know, this whole concept of blue pill, red pill, like we're all caught in the matrix, taking a blue pill, and someone needs to come out and say, we need a reality check and get out of cahoots with each other. Cause I do feel like it's on both sides. The vendors are filling us full of this junk data. We're buying into it because we're risk adverse and we need a reality check. So I don't know. That was a big takeaway for me, that the whole industry doesn't have a solution to that. So what's your reaction? Let me go to you first, Kristen. You have some thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of our topic today. And, you know, I've been in the industry for over 25 years in a variety of capacities. I started at the state tourism office level, So I, you know, really cut my teeth from the government standpoint. You understand that you work for a governor and the politics side of it. And then I went to private sector and worked for Starwood Hotels and Resorts and went on property. And that's when you really learned that most of those resorts that we love to go to don't exist for leisure. They exist for business and group and meetings. And you know, also all of the niche tourism, like the dining and the golf and the shopping and the spa, really important. And then decided to, I wanted to make more of a difference, and decided to go into the trade part. And then, so I worked at the Arizona Lodging and Hospitality Association for many years before becoming the actual lobbyist for the state of Arizona for tourism.
Oh,
So I did that for, you know, serving as a lobbyist for 3 years and then before becoming the DMO CEO at Long Island. So it's a variety of backgrounds, I think, that lead to my knowledge or my feelings about the industry. And one of our biggest problems is we're talking to ourselves. We're
yeah.
talking to ourselves. And so whether, you know, when you're talking to elected officials, what you need to remember is tourism is the most important thing to us, and it's what our whole lives revolve around. But most other people don't care about tourism, and they have a million other things to think about and worry about, which is why our podcast is so different and doesn't focus on the destination and tourism and things, because people don't care. And we need to really realize that what you just said, Stuart, is that we're talking to the vendors are talking to us, they're giving us solutions, and we're all rah-rahing ourselves. And in the meantime, we're not resonating with, you know, the rest of the world.
Yeah, I agree. So, Adam, you have a take on that? Because I really want to dig into what Kristen just said, because there was a trend I saw at the conference, but I'll let you respond first.
Well, I just want to keep it simple in that if somebody wants to hear maybe a deeper dive on my thoughts on some of the issues that you mentioned that you saw at MarCom, I would say go listen to our episode that we did with Zeke Coleman, because I give a really kind of expanded version of my opinion there, and I don't think I would change a lot from what I said on that episode on this one. So check that out if you want to hear my full opinion. I'd like to get a little more into Kristen's topic that she brought today.
Yeah, so before we jump into the topic, I do want to say there was a trend. There was actually two sessions with the exact same title, which was Marketing the Marketing, right? And so there was a lot of conversation and more sessions that talked a lot about, are we doing a good job talking to our stakeholders? And then my favorite session of the whole conference, shout out to Matt Steiker and Kwaku from, whose name, what's his last name? I forget, but they're from Madden Media. They did a whole session on code switching. And they were talking about from the consumer perspective and really talking to the right audience in the right manner. And the example they gave was Jerry Maguire, the movie. And when that movie came out, and you can ask people, what kind of movie is that? Is that a buddy movie, a buddy sports movie, or is it a rom-com? Right? And depending on how you perceive that movie, you could argue either way. The real answer is it's kind of both, right? But what they said is, when that movie came out, they were hitting up primarily males with this is a sports buddy movie. So they'd use channels like ESPN and stuff to really push this is a buddy sports movie. But then they were targeting females with this is a rom-com, right? And so code switching your message to your audience and changing it. They gave another example of a campaign in Australia with McDonald's, where they had this, they realized there was like a late night audience that they weren't really talking to. And so they came out with a bunch of campaigns where they would like deliberately misspell the order. So you'd instead of Chicken McNuggets, you'd be like Mickey McChuggets and stuff. So it was like it was sort of emulating the drunk late night person that's coming into McDonald's and doing so. So I think knowing your audience and code switching is really imperative. And that's what Kristen was saying, right? We're not talking to our stakeholders, our residents, in the right way. And I was in a roundtable session talking to a lot of other DMOs, and the question, one of the questions was posed about marketing the marketing was, how many of you have dedicated resources and strategies aimed at talking to your residents? You know, because ultimately they're voting in the elected officials, and you tend to get in trouble when your community turns anti-tourism. And I got to tell you, it was a very much the minority of people even had a strategy, let alone resources, to talk to their local constituents.
Yeah,
Very scary.
I will respond to that, Stuart, because that's one of the things that I mentioned in my New Year's resolutions, and we did kind of a deep dive on that, that destinations have to start making their local residents, stakeholders. They have to make it a target persona that they identify clearly and understand how to talk to, and have an intentional campaign to communicate with that group. And I think that's one of the main things that I see missing in the destination space, is we spend so much time talking to people who are going to come spend money, which is great, but the people who elect the officials that are going to make the decisions about our future, we don't even communicate with, and they're the ones that we're supposed to be providing the value to. So I think that's a really smart session, it sounds like. And Matt, it doesn't surprise me that Matt gave a great session, because Matt's brilliant. So great to hear.
We're going to have him come on the show, both of them come on the show and talk about that.
I'm a big fan of Matt Steiker too. I think he's definitely an out of the box thinker. So I think he'd be great on this show. But two things, just to bounce off what you said. First of all, Adam knows this. I actually wrote my CDME paper on the Jerry Maguire memo, the things we think but do not say. It was great. I went through, you know, it was like you had me at hello, which is like talk, educating elected officials. It was show me the money. And then at the end, I was like, who's coming with me? You know? So, but I really think that's disruption at its core, right? The Jerry Maguire memo and getting back to the core of why we do what we do. And if you haven't seen the movie, again, it's one of my favorite movies, but, is because, you know, the agents are supposed to serve the players, right? And tourism is for the residents. We exist because we want to generate tax revenue and jobs and business for the residents and the quality of life for the residents. We're not just inviting tourists to come flood our beaches and create traffic. We're doing it for the residents. And that has to be the core of our values and everything that we do, and our guiding light. And it's interesting that you say that, because I've been saying that for a long time.
Yeah. Could not agree more. We exist to improve the quality of life for our residents. And so that's a great setup for the topic today. You know, we've been reaching out to folks in the industry that maybe zag when others zig, that are a little bit provocative, that forward thinkers. And you're certainly one of those folks in this category. But I got to tell you, even I was shocked when Adam told me that the topic you wanted to pick. And so we're going to talk about today, like, are DMOs going to be relevant in the future? Like, are we doomed as an industry? And we sort of pontificated on that a little bit in this show, in certain things like with technology disruption and other stuff. It's, are we going to be relevant in the future? But like, this episode is like, are we doomed as an industry? And so I want you to make your case. Like, why did you pick this topic? Yeah. Why are you thinking about this? And then we'll jump into like how realistic that is and what we can do about it down the road. But love for
you
to set
it is.
The
and
table.
I don't want the reputation of being Chicken Little in the industry. Because I do think there are ways we can, you know, stay in existence and avoid extinction for maybe longer than what could happen if we are addressing the issues that you guys are talking about, and if we're evolving and doing the things that we need to do to stay relevant. But, you know, it's amazing to me, so many of my colleagues that I see that, and if you're looking at what's happening in the world, there's just a lot of barriers that we face. And I think, you know, if I had a time machine, I would go back and just never, ever set us up as nonprofits that exist off of tourism taxes, that the way we were founded and set up and funded from the very beginning set us up for failure. And if you'll indulge me for a second, our good friend Jeanette, who, by the way, was from New York City Tourism and Conventions. Mm-hmm. I like to say I knew her before. She was, you know, the global thought leader that she is. She's always been an incredible asset to New York, and even tried to hire her at one point. That was kind of a joke. She was like, love you, Long Island, but obviously set for bigger things. But she had ChatGPT recreate that famous Barbie speech that America Ferrero did. Have you guys heard this yet?
Have you guys done it on your show yet? Sure. So keep going.
Okay.
No one
so she had ChatGPT do the famous Barbie speech, but from a DMO standpoint. And you know what it said is, you have to be everything, everywhere, all at once. You have to create campaigns that celebrate your destination's culture, but you can't alienate anyone in the process. You have to showcase local traditions, but not exploit them. You have to attract more visitors, but avoid over-tourism. You have to prioritize inclusivity and accessibility, but also make everything seem luxurious and exclusive. You have to work with governments, private industries, and travelers, three groups that rarely agree on anything and find common ground among them. You have to embrace the latest technology like AI, but also prove that you're not replacing people with it. You have to honor the past, highlight the present, and predict the future all at the same time. And no matter how successful you are, no matter how many visitors come or how many stories your campaigns inspire, someone will ask why you didn't achieve more or why your destination isn't at the top of every list. It's exhausting and impossible, and yet DMOs do it every single day.
It's brilliant. It's
and that's
so insightful.
And that's the story, yeah. Right? There's, we're not funded properly. We're constantly at political risk. We're set up as nonprofits, which as a for-profit, we could charge what we wanted to and have more freedom. And no matter who you talk to, you're not pleasing somebody. And you know, with stakeholders and in a place like Long Island, you know, we're really a great example of this because we're made up of two counties with two separate county executives, two separate legislatures, 120 different towns, villages, and hamlets, 120 chambers of commerce on Long Island. So, I mean, there's over 900 elected officials, and no matter what we do, we're not doing something for somebody. And that's a very difficult situation to be in and to show success.
Wow. I mean, you make a really powerful statement and argument about our situation. So what the heck do we do about it, Kristen?
Yeah, so I think, again, if I had a time machine, I would go back and set us up like economic development organizations are set up. And wouldn't it have been great that instead of looking for feeding off tax revenues, if we would have said every time a hotel gets built, a portion of, you know, 0.002% of that profit has to go to, you know, bringing people back to the destination and benefiting the entire destination. Then we would have dedicated funds that were not, you know, able to be dispersed or swept. But, you know, I was listening to y'all's podcast about Doge, and I thought that was really interesting. So I actually got to hear, I think, the unveiling of the Stu's News, you know, little jingle. I agree. It's long. The unveiling was great, but let's snip it. But I love it. But I think, you know, with tech coming out, there's AI, there's social influencers. We've talked about the death of websites based on the lack of SEO. So, you know, it's not the old days where we were the only ones that produced the official visitors guide and we were the only ones placing ads. Now there's influencers. There's so many people that do exactly what we do and luring people. We talked about funding. We need to diversify our funding. And I don't just mean TIDS. TIDS are great, but TIDS can also be swept. So looking at those models where we're having corporate sponsorships, where we, you know, where we try to find other sources of private industry, you know, maybe even set ourselves up. And not a lot of not agencies are not going to like this, but set ourselves up as for-profit agencies so that we can act as a marketing organization, just like anybody
else.
And
do activities that generate revenue. Yeah, that was
correct.
One of the things that surprised me coming from the for-profit side to the nonprofit side. Because, you know, I'd say a lot of DMOs and the CMOs within the DMOs spend a lot of their time thinking about the revenue side of the business. And I'm someone who thinks we should be spending most of our time thinking on the how we're investing that dollars perspective, right? Because that's really what we're trying to do is improving the quality of life through the promotion of tourism. And so when I got here, we would spending a lot of time on the revenue side. And so I wanted to fix that. I wanted a solution that sort of took that away from being a time suck. And we created some. And I got to the point where I'm like, I wanted to do more. And I was getting pushback from our board and our CFO and folks like that. And rightfully so, because of our structure that's saying, we're not a for-profit company. Don't be thinking of us like a for-profit company. There are mechanisms we could create, whether that's selling merch or brand partnerships and sponsorships with big national brands, where we could generate a lot more money because we can talk to a big audience. And we're discouraged from doing that because the nature of us being a nonprofit, right? It creates more red flags if we're creating too much. But, you know, I think one of the things that was brought up at Marcom, which I think is interesting, and I'm going to play a little devil's advocate on your point here, is, you know, we've evolved as organizations, right? If we start with the premise of we're here to improve the quality of life through the promotion of tourism, then what that means and what our function is, the what of what we do, it has already evolved a lot, right? So when we say things like, well, the DMO website might be irrelevant 5 years from now, which it definitely could be if the consumer behavior shifts as like it looks like it is, That doesn't mean we're not relevant. It just means where we play and what we do, it's going to shift. Just like at one point, all we did was brochures and hand-to-hand combat with people, right? But then websites came along, and then mobile came along, and social came along. So we've evolved what we do. Like, it's not like we were doing search engine optimization 20 years ago or 30 years ago, right? So is it possible that we're missing the point that there's inevitably going to be consumer change, but we're just going to find a new place to have a role in how we invite people to come to our destination?
Yeah, sure. And again, I'm not encouraging the demise of the DMO. Obviously, this is my career. This is I want us to exist forever. And I do think there are some ways, but you said it, we have to evolve. And quickly, more quickly than I think we have been doing as an industry. We have evolved and we have moved forward, but I think begrudgingly. We have to really embrace that disruption. We have to adopt change and do all those things because as people are using their phone more for you probably saw Cody when you were at Marcom and he's talking about he uses ChatGPT on his phone for everything. It's all ask and answer, and we don't know where they're pulling that information. So producing content, I think some of us that have been producing content and like we have 11 different social media channels that cover a huge spectrum so that we can expand our attack ratio. So when now that there's AI and you don't know where it's pulling from, we have more of an option for it to be pulling from our content than just one channel that says this. So really branching out, but thinking forward and like you said, I do think that there are ways we can extend what we do. Tourism is a pretty new industry. If I don't know if you've ever watched the documentary The Last Tourist, but it is depressing.
No.
It is depressing about our industry. I encourage you watch it. Because we need to know, it's just as important for us to be positive, but also need to know what is out there and what, people think of our industry. And it's, tourism really started 50 years ago when air travel became so prominent. And tourism is becoming more and more of a negative thing for over tourism. So we just have to make sure that we're keeping our residents first priority at heart. And what we're doing isn't just driving visitors, but we're looking at ways to mitigate traffic. We're looking at ways to fight seasonality. We're making sure that what we're doing does actually improve the quality of life. And we're creating content and resources that help that. Like, we're not just promoting, well, come to the Hamptons. We're doing, and Adam knows this, we're working on animated videos that show you how to get off the road and use public transportation and take a bike and do those things. And we're putting dollars towards that to help our community make sure that they know that we've got their back. But it's a great industry. I love our industry. I do think we can do things that make it more, continue our relevance longer and evolve and change. But I don't know that everyone's going to do that.
Yeah, and I
Can I
think
ask you guys a
where my
question?
go ahead, yeah.
So just as I'm kind of here, both of you are on the DMO side, right? And I'm on the vendor side. And as I hear what you're saying, I hear consumer behavior has evolved a ton over the last, 20 years, 30 years. And the guardrails of a DMO, the structure of a DMO was established based on past consumer behavior. The challenge is what I see is I don't think it's realistic that we're going to get some like national legislation that recalibrates the DMO's guardrails, right? So how do you then, in your community with your local politicians and stakeholders, fix your guardrails to facilitate your ability to evolve with consumer behavior? Because I think just like when I entered the industry, it was a destination marketing organization. Then it was called a destination management organization. Now it's a destination organization. And yet the structure is exactly the same as it was before. So, like, there's this attempt at evolution. How do you actually make change that allows you to do more innovative activities and take better risks?
You want to take
Yeah,
that, Kristen? I
sure.
have
I
some
mean,
thoughts for you.
again, I think it's all about diversification. I really do. I mean, I think those destinations that have tourism improvement districts are ahead of the game. They at least have some kind of solidified funding. I think looking at, and we've done it on Long Island, looking at becoming a for-profit because it's just, it's it's just crazy when, you know, we charge $300 a year for a partner to come to be part of it. And somebody's like, well, you know, what do they get? What's my value for that? I'm like, let me go to an ad agency and ask them what you can get for $300. Why are the expectations so much higher for our organization? Why does everyone expect us to do everything for free and serve as every individual business's personal marketing campaign? It's just unrealistic. So, but I, you know, whether you become for profit or whether what we've done in the last few years is we've built profit, we've built partner tiers. So the more you pay, the more you get. And a lot of people, there was a lot of pushback in the beginning of that, like you said, Stuart, a lot of resistance. But what we learned in that process is that the more people pay, the happier they are with what we're giving them, because they're investing and they're more engaged and they pay attention to their investment. If you're giving it all away for free, then people don't pay attention and they're just like, oh, what are you doing? And it's free. So it's not really, once they put their money where their mouth is, you see a big difference in their engagement.
Yeah. And some of that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because we do the same where we got tiers. Like there's anyone can be a member. It's very low cost, like you said, and people can get a seat on the bus. But if you really want a premium seat and you want to do more stuff, then you pay a little more. But our behavior changes. You know, we are more interactive with them. We're listening to them more. We're providing them more of a bespoke white glove experience. And so they feel it. They feel more love. And even though, yes, mechanically, are we doing more and reaching more people? Yes. But I think it's just as important as the relationship side of that, because now they see the value, they feel the value because of the touch points. And I think that's where it starts. I think one, we've got to educate ourselves as DMOs. One of the things I love about the industry is how collaborative it is. You know, I think, but there's a reason that it's collaborative. It's because we're all very risk adverse and we're always looking for someone else to have done it first. So we're not the trailblazers, so that we're not the ones that end up as the Visit Florida poster child, right, when we make a mistake. But I think that's also our Achilles heel, because we're waiting, always waiting to see someone else succeed or fail before we try it. And you know, I was on that panel with Jeanette at Marcom, and we were asking questions about things like, do you have an AI policy in your organization? And I got to tell you, it feels like there's a lot of DMOs that don't have an AI policy. And I'm like, Gus, like ChatGPT came out in November 2022. It's like, that's almost 2.5 years ago. And there were literally people that told me, I haven't had time to do that yet. I'm like, God, it's 2.5 years. What are we talking about here? It's not that you don't have time. It's that you don't choose to prioritize that thing. You're choosing to spend your time and energy somewhere else. And that might be because you're not comfortable, because you're scared, because you really do value something else more. But this is a trend with AI specifically and other technology that's coming along, that we cannot be behind on this one, right? We've always been naturally behind on digitization. You know, when the internet came along, when mobile came along, when social came along, we've always been behind. We're literally a decade behind e-commerce, I think, right now. Because I used to work e-commerce, went to hotels. We're 10 years behind e-commerce. We're 5 years behind hotels. If we get 10 years behind on AI, you better believe we're digging our own grave, because it's going to fundamentally shift. So the fact that we're 2.5 years in and people don't even have a policy on how they can use AI. And I found at least half a dozen, and there's probably more DMOs, that literally do not let any of their employees use AI for their work. The vast majority don't pay for the tools, you know? And I'm like, guys, this is not a battle and a front that we can sit down and wait on. Because if one or two of us start falling behind, as one DMO goes, the whole industry goes. Because it just takes one poster child to set off a different legislature, a different elected official in another state, and we'll start to see like the house of cards crumble. So that's why I think there's an existential threat to us right now, is because we're waiting to see.
That's a great example, because, you know, as collaborative as we are, having an AI policy, you know, what I've noticed is I've talked to some people too about that. And again, Cody helped us with that on Long Island. But I talk to people and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm working on it. I've hired this vendor. We're spending thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So why don't we have somebody in our industry that says, here's the AI policy, and just give it to everybody? and you can look at it and tweak it. You know what I mean? This is not a hard thing. We shouldn't all be, and I think that's one of the things we do. There's some things where we're going to compete, our marketing campaigns. Obviously, we need to set our distinct destination profile and character. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things we do that we that are turnkey. And kind of like, again, one of the things I've been talking about is an animated video that shows the tourism dollar, why it matters. And because a lot of people think that Long Island, we should just have discount Suffolk should go to Nassau and Nassau should go to Suffolk. There's 3.5 million people. We could just have people come and having the outside dollar come in. Why are we all individually creating those kinds of things? There should be a blanket, you know, video that shows the value of DMOs in tourism. There should be a blanket AI policy for the DMO, you know, that we all just, somebody gives us, we can just go. And Adam, you've been creating that, right?
Well, I've been trying definitely with Tourism IQ. This is partly where I'd say, well, why isn't the organization that's kind of the overarching membership organization that's supposed to lobby for the industry, who collects a lot of money across the industry, why aren't they doing this? Why isn't this getting to everybody? And I don't know, that's a very simple thing, but that's part of the reason there's a space in the marketplace for Tourism IQ is I really believe that we need to do more sharing of the knowledge and the things that we learn along the way, or people are going to get left behind. And we kind of all need to get more relevant together, because if we don't all get more relevant together, then we're going to lose the narrative of the value of our organization across the country. And if that happens, especially with the DOGE stuff going on, I think that's where you run into a real future problem for the industry. So I think people like Kristen, Stuart, you guys, as you're kind of playing defense for the industry right now and protecting the industry from losing its reputation. And I really think that there's a lot of knowledge sharing that needs to happen, which is why I built Tourism IQ, not to turn this into an ad, but that's where we need to go.
Yeah, and I, you know, maybe Tourism IQ is the solution, right? But there, if you look back at our past, organizations like DI have performed that role in the past, right? And I think they still, to some degree, try to. But several years ago, they came out with, here's the standards on how to measure PR for our industry, right? They try to do that again with attribution on the marketing side and couldn't reach consensus. Like, they got pretty far, but then because there was a lot of stakeholders and everything's run through committees at those kind of organizations, it just got too difficult and too in the weeds. And so I think the pursuit of perfection got in the way. And so,
of massive initiatives, as opposed to, here's an AI policy that all of you can implement and distribute.
A starting point, right? Even if it's a framework, because the reality is every DMO is different. We're funded differently. We're structured differently. Our purpose, our mandate's different. There are no two DMOs the same. Our budgets are very different, right? And so to create a one-size-fits-all solution is impossible. You're never going to get every DMO to agree. But with something as simple as an AI policy, you can say, hey, here's a framework. Here are the things you need to include. Here's an example. And take this and then go to ChatGPT and, you know, create the one that's for you. And know that it doesn't, we talked a lot in the panel with Jeanette about people are looking for the right policy for them. And it's not necessarily that it has to be right, because what right means to you is very subjective. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It just needs to be something that's a starting point that gets you a little bit further forward, a little bit better tomorrow than you were today. And so you don't have to encapsulate every aspect of AI in that one thing. Like, you don't need to, for example, think about like the environmental impact of your AI use at the beginning. Like, is that something you want to think about at some point? Maybe. But it doesn't need to be baked in today in your, all you need to do is say, here are things we can do, here are things we cannot do, but we're going to encourage the use of it, right? That's the starting point of a policy. Well, and the fact that every DMO hasn't done that is bonkers.
Exactly. And for disclosure, I am on the board of Destinations International. So, and I do know that they do great things for the industry, like the CDME and the DMAP program and like the education thing that you just went to. I mean, incredible. Yep. You know, they do a lot for the industry. But again, I still think we're stuck in this era of white papers for each other and talking to ourselves. And what we need is tools, and what we need are things that are going to make our lives easier and move forward so that we can, you know, concentrate on the other things. Even, you know, you're talking about AI, but, you know, cybersecurity, cybersecurity insurance, even what is your policy? Just, And not that everybody's going to be the same, but it's a foundation. It's a blueprint for what you can, you know, handbook. You know, we do a lot of that in New York State. I was just recently the president of the New York State Destination Marketing Organization. And we do a lot of sharing. What do you guys use for cybersecurity insurance? What do you do? Yeah. Here's this policy. Share my this. How do you face these things? And I do think that there's a lot of additional sharing, as collaborative as we are, because we're all willing to share. But there just needs to be a centralized resource. But I do, you know, but again, being involved in politics, just there, you know how many people, and again, I being a previous lobbyist, I would go to the state legislature on, you know, to pitch funding tourism and how important tourism marketing is and that they need to carve out dollars. And I remember being there on Disability Day, and there are people swarming their offices with, you know, disabilities that need money for their basic livelihood and services. And I'm following them saying, listen, marketing, you know, for tourism matters. And you know, yes, there's a dotted line because we generate the revenue that pays for those services that those people need. But it's really hard for a lot of elected officials when they have a limited budget to try and carve out money for tourism marketing when you've got somebody that really, you know, is life or death over here, or it's education, or it's roads filling potholes. So it's more and more, it's increasingly difficult to make that argument because it's harder to connect the dots of revenue. And I, you know, I think the first, to your point, like the first person that says we're going to eliminate this DMO or whatever, and there's been a couple of them, and just replace it with whatever. And if you don't see the destination, you know, drop in occupancy or whatever, if you don't see that, that's the danger. If it happens once and you don't see a dramatic drop in those things and in revenue and leisure, you know, travel, everyone's going to follow suit.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is there is precedent, and it has sort of justified our existence, right? If you look back to Colorado,
stop using the Colorado. Right?
You could keep going. Yeah. So it's Duluth. It's now Montana. It looks like they're going to probably have some issues, right? So, but I don't think there hasn't been one case study that has said, "Oh, look, we're relevant." But I think the mistake is, we all think of ourselves as just marketing in the traditional sense of paid, earned, and owned marketing, right? Because if that's why what happened in Duluth happened. The mayor saw them as a marketing firm to promote tourism, and we're deeper than that. We've got to get those integrated with the community. We've got to have those community shared values. We've got to have representation on boards, and we've got to be a convener for all organizations. So whether it's your county, your city, local civic organizations, come to you for solutions to their problems. Because then you have like this moat of defense around you that isn't you just saying, hey, we get good ROI that we sort of can't justify. It's, no, we provide value throughout the community. And it's not just marketing, right? It's raising the entire community through collaboration, through education, through investment, things like that. So I think that's the problem, right? We still have a bit of an identity crisis, and we put lipstick on a pig by saying, oh, we're a different named organization, we're management, we're whatever. I think we're focusing on the wand, and we need to focus on the wizard. You know, who are we, and what is our purpose needs to be the focus. And we worry too much about the wand piece of how we're perceived and what we're doing related to the outside world. So I don't know. That's my two cents.
Yeah. Kristen made a great point about the importance of diversifying efforts a little bit, right? Like you mentioned, if you're just a paid, earned, and owned shop or whatever, then you could probably be replaced with an ad agency. That's true. If you just have a paid media centric advertising campaign, why are you any different from an advertising agency?
Yeah.
And diversifying and providing value in a variety of different ways, showing up, like you mentioned, Kristen, in the political circles, and just having a lot of those conversations. I don't know. I think diversifying your efforts is a really great way to make sure you stay relevant and build a much better defense than if you're kind of a one-trick pony that could easily be replaced by a third-party outsource firm.
I agree. And I didn't mean to jump on you, Stuart, about Colorado, but I think that's an industry problem, is that we're still using something from the 90s. And that was before social media even existed. Okay, that example. So that example is, it needs to be put to bed, because right now, if a DMO goes away, you have a million influencers and social media channels and local, you know, local organizations or news outlets that are promoting the restaurants, the attractions, all the things that we're doing. So I think the other thing, diversifying is key. Being politically active, being aware, being in those circles, being the influencer. Right? Being the influencer, not just utilizing influencers. And Stuart, you guys have done this, becoming the influencer for your destination that everybody relies on, and being so visible. And again, being everywhere where content is being consumed, podcasts, YouTube, you know, again, social media, AI, voice, you know, utilizing every piece of technology and making sure that we are on the forefront of that and the early adapters of that. Because, you know, if we go away and another influencer pops up and is doing everything that we're doing just for the price of a free meal, you know, it's much more difficult. Now, I do think convention destinations have a better shot at staying relevant, because you got to sell the convention. They can really show the sales. And that's important. But, you know, I remember when COVID first happened, and I pushed back on this because things were starting to get weird. And it was people, you know, people were getting sick, and we came out as an industry, keep calm and travel on. That was the number. Everybody was like, embrace this. And people pushed back on me. Why aren't you putting this on your social, Kristen? You're not participating with the crew. I'm like, 'cause it's not responsible. We're telling people to travel as COVID is breaking out. And, you know, and here on Long Island, we stopped promoting people coming to Long Island. And I was on several panels where people were like, we never stopped selling. We're bringing people here, you know, in other states. And I'm like, that we also have to think about our residents and make sure. One thing we haven't talked about today, which I think is, again, kind of goes under that diversification umbrella, participating with economic development, making sure we're at the table and talking about talent attraction, relocation, entrepreneurship, you know, making sure that we're there in those conversations, and that people know to tap into our talents and our resources for those purposes, because that's what the community and the politicians care about. Those kinds of things are going to help that I do think we can overcome. And I do think we can evolve, you know, evolve, Stuart. So don't think that I'm like, we're all doomed. I hope so. I mean, I'm hoping I have, you know, time to get through retirement in this industry. But I wouldn't tell my children to go into it. I don't know if you would. Is that the, you know, here's my question to you. If your children were going to a career, would you recommend they go into the DMO space?
I think I would, for a couple of reasons. One, I think the people in this industry are some of the most genuine, collaborative, friendly people. I mean, we are in the hospitality business, right? And that kind of rings true. So I think it's good. But I think we need young, disruptive folks to come in and help us, you know, envision and fulfill the future. So I think, you know, I don't really think we're doomed if we do the right things. I think if we stick ahead in the sand and we play only defense and we stay risk adverse, then I think we're doomed. But I think what I'm seeing is an uprising of talented troublemakers and challengers in the industry that are willing to stand up and have a voice and say, we can do better. You know, and so, I mean, this show, what Adam's doing with Tourism IQ, I think seeing some of the conversations that DI put on and how they were willing to structure it around conversation, not just someone sort of soft selling from the pulpit. I think I'm seeing a desire for us to do better as an industry. So I'm actually hopeful. I'm not Chicken Little. I'm not Pollyanna. I'm sort of firmly in the middle of those two. But yeah, I do have hope for this industry, because I think the world needs this industry. I think travel is an inalienable right. I think we're better when we travel. I think as humans, I think we are our best selves when we travel. I think it helps us be better citizens of the world when we travel. I think it brings people together in a lot of ways and solves a lot of the conflicts and frustrations that exist. So I think the world needs travel, and I think destination marketing has to exist if travel is going to continue to be at the forefront of people's mind. And consumers are going to travel more, I think, in the future, than not less, especially as we have more potentially more leisure time. We're going to consume more media. We're going to travel more. I mean, those are the two things that we're going to do when we have more recreation time. So I'm hopeful. I am hopeful. How about you, Adam? What's your take?
Well, I'm hopeful too. I think the word of comfort, I guess, that I would give you guys is ad agencies will be long gone before DMOs are, if that makes you feel any better. But I think this has been a great conversation. I think what I would like to see is, like, if there's a takeaway for me, it's destinations using diversification in their strategy and making sure that they look at all the different components of their role and creating their activities and strategy around the different components to make sure they're playing better defense and adding maximum value to the community. Because the main issue is, if you're not adding tangible, valuable value to the community, you're in jeopardy. And I don't think that's unique to the DMO space. I think it's unique to any organization that has to serve another stakeholder in some way. And I think that based on some of the advice that you and Kristen gave today about how to do that, I think will really help a lot of people understand that if you're a one-trick pony, you're doomed, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're adding a variety of different types of value to the community, it's going to be really difficult to uproot you from the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll just bring it full circle by saying, look, I've dedicated my life to this industry and I still have a lot more to give. So I love it. I totally see the value of it. It's what I live and breathe. But I think, you know, for those of us but it's hard, you know, and I think it's not that I'm not telling my daughters, I have three college age daughters, not to go into it because I don't love the people. The people are amazing. Tourism has given me everything in life that I love. I've traveled. I've met incredible people. I've learned so much. And I think there's a lot more to give. And I love the travel industry and what it contributes to the community. But you know, that's not going to necessarily pay the bills of your kids, like moving forward, you know, it's hard. And I think my kids aren't following my footsteps because they've seen the daily struggles of just trying mm-hmm. to keep it in existence and trying to survive and trying to evolve. And I love it. I still, like I said, I am still fueled by this, but to go back to that Jerry Maguire memo, if we as an industry don't keep the focus, and what he did, if you remember, what he did is he went to one client. He focused in on making sure what he did for his one client was the best he could do with that relationship and making it. So I think if we do that with our residents, and if we make sure that it's not just more and more people traveling and more people coming to our destination, it's really about what our destination needs. And each one is going to be different from, like I said, even not just tourism, but business attraction and talent and strategic growth, you know, and job creation, whatever it is that our own destinations need. If we're focusing on the core value of that for our residents and for the place that we call home, we will continue to be a viable and necessary organization.
Well said. That's amazing. Thank you, Kristen, for bringing this topic, like having the guts and the courage to say, I'm gonna have a difficult conversation with the industry. You know, this is public, and I know there's pressure and there's risk in us being vocal and being, you know, the first people to the canary in the coal mine, as it were, in terms of raising some of these issues. So, really, thank you for the courage. It's a service to the industry, and I think hopefully people will benefit from this conversation, and hopefully it'll inspire more to raise their hand and say, hey, I have a burning issue that this industry needs to talk about more. Because I do think we often suffer from the risk aversion and the tendency to stick our head in the sand, and this is not the time to do that right now. You know, that may have served us in the past to sort of fly under the radar and just coast along, but I think we all agree that the disruptions from technology and consumer behavior are different this time. They feel and look different. They're faster. They're grander in scale. And the uncertainty, which is not a place that DMOs thrive well in, uncertainty is at an all-time high. We really don't know what the future holds. And so we've got to be educated. We've got to be prepared. And we've got to be active participants in our own future. Because if we're not, I mean, we are literally doomed. So thank you for having the courage. If folks want to find you, Kristen, how can they do that?
Yeah, well, thank you guys for this platform to have conversations like this, because we at our core, we love tourism and we love this industry and what we do. And it's all for the purposes of doing better and working together. And like you said, it's not just about Long Island. It's about all of my peers. I want to be successful. So if people want to find me, I'm on LinkedIn. You know, make sure you do tune in to the Long Island Tea, or we also have the C-Suite Tea podcast. Yep. And we've got some good models out there to look at. So, and I want to learn, I still learn from all of my peers every day too. So yeah. I love it. Thank you for the platform.
Yeah. Thank you. Adam, they want to find you. How can they do that?
Yeah. And real quick, Kristen, thank you for pushing back on Stuart. I think that's probably one of the most valuable things that you did today. And I really appreciate it. No,
yeah,
you can find me on LinkedIn at Adam Stoker. And then you can also find me on Tourism IQ. And Kristen, I just want to say, the work that you're doing to create something different than every other DMO, it's one of the things that led me to you quickly when I came into the industry as well, and we connected early on, and I really value the leadership that you provide in a variety of ways. So really appreciate you coming on and having this conversation today.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam. You listening at home, please subscribe. Tell a friend about this show. We're definitely getting a lot of pickup on audio. The YouTube's, you know, people maybe don't want to watch our faces,
yeah,
Adam.
And I think there's an elephant in the room there.
I can understand that. But please subscribe, tell a friend. You know, this is a love letter to the industry. We want it to be by the industry, for the industry. I think we're really trying to be better tomorrow than we were today. And we're really getting some good conversation going. I think the first few episodes were awesome. We had some great, but there were safe conversations, right? Where there was stuff where there was a lot of consensus. And increasingly, I think you're going to see us try to get more disagreement. I think last week's episode was a great example of that. I think we had some back and forth today as well. So we'd love to have people on that disagree with us as well as agree with us. So please reach out to us. You can reach me, stuart.butler@visitmuddlebeach.com. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
I don't think I said Adam enough, but maybe I tried.